And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight, we are blessed with having Neil Goldhar here in the studio. And Neil is the author of Ego's Way, Experiencing Greatness Only. You know, in a time when many of us are actually, you know, going the opposite, where there are many leaders out there that are talking about, you know, detachment and moving away from our ego. This is a book that actually really delves into why it is that we have an ego, why that's important at, you know, why it's important for our progression, for our spiritual development, and really in a time such as this, and in a third dimensional planet, which we were on, I think it's probably pretty impossible for us to get rid of the ego. And I don't know that that's necessarily what we want to do anyway. But this is a heavy little book about the role of our ego in the world. And Neil approaches it with a very honest and it's very open about his experiences in life, using relationships and career really as your major examples. So welcome, Neil.
Thank you, Lori. It's great to be here.
So what do you think was your turning point on this journey for you? How did you get to here?
Well, that's a great question. My turning point really came about right after I graduated from college, and I started to think about the ego and its role. And I guess I also went to university and they talked about one form of the ego, and then I went into another place and they talked about another form of the ego, and there's all these different models of the ego out there saying, confusing the heck out of me. And I was confused for a long time about what was the ego really about. So I then went into kind of a spiritual process for myself and started to gain the insight that, why is it that sometimes in one relationship, for instance, I feel great and my ego is really feeling great, and then in another instance, I feel bad and my ego is beating me up. Mm-hmm. And then sort of I put all this together into a concept of saying the ego is really about two sides to it, which is it can have you feeling great or it can have you feeling horrible. And it's about that tapping into what we want with the ego. So if we use it in a dysfunctional way, it's going to make us feel bad. If we use it in a great way, it's going to make us feel great. Mm-hmm. So all we need to do is align ourselves with our spiritual essence or who we are, and then tap into our egos of feeling great and that giving us that confidence to really shine our light in this world. And that's what I started to do back several years ago when I started to write this book.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I'm sure you have your own point of view about, you know, the detachment that's out there and how people are. And, you know, there are times when, you know, it's probably really important to detach, because I think we get caught up in a fearful mind, or we get caught up in the energy of fear that sort of permeates us, especially around this time where it's, you know, we're in a supposed financial crisis that seems to have been created, that seems to create more fear to get us to be more controlled and more manipulated. But, you know, it is a time where, you know, this is a good time to get detached, at least from that fear, so that you understand a little bit more about yourself and how fear can influence you, and certainly influence you on the dysfunctional relationship with our ego, which we'll get into. So you kind of start the book off by saying, you know, that that we're a player without direction in life, or at least that's how you started. And I think probably a lot of us do. And, you know, before we arrive at this play, that God source, which you use quite frequently in the book, I guess everybody has their own name, or I like how you've put God and source together, which is unique, I think, in anything that I've read. But, you know, that our inner being or our God source has set the stage and provided all the props and the different scenes to act. And I guess we kind of have, with regards to our choices and our ego, you know, which choices we want to make in our stage, in our play.
Right. Absolutely. It's really about, I always say it's about lining up who you are, which means what's your passions? So, and what are passions? Well, they're knowledge, abilities, and skills we're excited to give to others. And then it's about, once we tap into the passions, we can start to focus on our purpose. And that gives even a greater picture of what we're meant to do in this world. And once we get that, we go into that, okay, now I know the purpose. How do I get into the confidence side so I can give this purpose? Because a lot of times we fall short on that. I mean, I've done it for years, falling short on knowing what my purpose was, but really being afraid to give that purpose because my ego wouldn't let me. It would say, I'm not worthy. I'm a victim. I'm all this. And then I discovered that, well, when we know the purpose and we take those steps to develop the confidence, which is really starting from a mode of appreciation, and that changes the fear, saying that I got to be scared of this, to saying I'm good enough for this and I can go out and I can do this. And then finding that open door of saying, well, how do I find that open door? And that is finding and listening to our inspiration. So if I'm inspired to paint, I paint. If I'm inspired to walk to the store, I walk to the store. I don't filter out that inspiration, because that's where I got trapped in my own life. To when I started to filter, saying, well, I'm scared to do this. I can't do this. For instance, going to the movie theater, and if there's no one to go with, what happens? Well, for a long time, I said, I never wanted to go alone, because I'm afraid to go alone, because what will people think? And that was huge for me, was what will people think? And then I started to go to the theater alone, and I noticed there's no one but me watching me. No one else really clued into my own process. So I discovered that it was just in my head. It was a false expectation appearing real. And then I discovered that it's okay. And what people thought was made up by my own psyche.
That's really important. I think that's, you know, a very key point about how we sort of move around in this world, is that we're always afraid, or we do have that fear, which is the acronym for
false expectations appearing real.
Right. And, you know, we often worry about other people. And I know that, you know, when we're younger, you know, we're always thinking that people are looking at us. And, you know, there's a part of us where, you know, the world is ours and we're the creators. And so there could be an aspect of us, you know, creating that energy where people would watch us. But we have really no control at all as to what they're thinking about us. Because that, you know, how could you possibly, you know, interfere or suggest or anything? I mean, we all have our own judgments. And usually those are the filters that we relate in the world.
And the beauty of this, too, is this is where the ego comes in. Mm. This is where that confidence side of the ego, the power side of the ego, which says the more I'm powerful and the more I'm confident, the less I care about what people think. Mm-hmm. Because then it's about me and what I want rather than what other people want. I lived a lot of my life with what other people want, never really recognizing what I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was ingrained in us when we were children to, you know, what will the neighbors think? You know, you have to do the right thing. You have to, you know, we were just ingrained as children to worry about what everybody else thought, because that's what their parents did, and that's what our parents' parents did, and it's been passed down because that was a way of, you know, I guess controlling and manipulating us from a very young age, not on purpose, but the whole aspect of God and religion was that, you know, there's someone up there that's judging us and could condemn us. And it's just, that's how they've used fear to manipulate us into worrying about what other people think.
Yes. Yeah. And it even, I even went into a role of thinking, in order for me to do something, it had to be perfect. So people would accept what I did. And now I'm in the place where I'm saying, it's okay to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And to go out and do it. And if it's a mistake, it's a mistake. But I still have that experience rather than locking myself up and saying, I have to wait for the perfect moment. Because that perfect moment never came. Mm-hmm. But when I did step out and say, whatever it is, it is, the perfect moment started to appear. The synchronistic moment started to appear. Mm-hmm. And it became a much more amazing life.
Now, you talked about passions, and, you know, a lot of people that I know and meet and connect with seem to have an issue about trying to figure out what their passions are. You kind of made it sound like it was rather simple, and that our life purpose, when we're following our passions, evolves from that activity.
I wish it was simple.
Okay.
It took me years to discover it. And fortunately, for me, how I discovered it was I just was a very sensitive child. And I've always been very sensitive. And when I was a kid, I thought that was a burden. That nobody wanted a sensitive kid around them. Like my friends, they didn't want anyone that sensitive around them. But later on, I discovered it was actually a gift, because my sensitivity turned into helping me to find out more what I really enjoyed in life. And I started to explore different avenues and different things and got many different types of jobs. And it all kind of brought me to a place where, yes, I found, I feel what my purpose is. But yeah, it took me years and a lot of exploring and searching and a lot of diving into going into depth with myself to find that. So it is. It can be a difficult thing.
What do you recommend, or what do you help people with to figure out what their passion is and then to move into their purpose?
The first thing I would say is really dive into... Well, there's five aspects. The first thing is dive into your characteristics. So put your best foot forward. What do you appreciate yourself about with your characteristics that you have? And the second thing is then your personality traits. That plays a factor. Well, start finding and asking people what your personality traits are. And dive into yourself and start asking those questions. And then... there's something by Gardner called multiple intelligences, and that's about 9 different types of intelligences that can be used to really help to discover what your passions are. So what type of knowledge and learning do you like, and then start also looking into the different fields and seeing what kind of fields can really be used with all the stuff you've researched, which is your characteristics, personality, multiple intelligences, and have fun with that. A lot of times we get serious. I still sometimes get serious about things, and then I wake up and say, did I have to be so serious? Or would it have been easier if I had more fun with it and brought more joy and greatness to it? And actually, I underline the word greatness in my book, because greatness and God source to me are the same. That when we can tap into our greatness, we're tapping into God source. We're tapping into what we're meant to be rather than what we think we ought to be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a unique and interesting aspect of our search, really, is to try and figure out, you know, what our passions are. And, you know, I always say to people, you know, just start with something that you feel connection with, and then likely it will take you somewhere else. Just like you said, you know, if you get inspired to paint, paint. That painting may lead you either to taking classes, or it may lead you to, you know, something completely different through the process of learning that and just allowing, you know, yourself to move in whatever area it takes. And that's really, you know, trusting the intuition that you sort of talk about, or trusting, you know, your soul's guidance, because that's really where our passions come from.
Yes. No, but here's also the thing that a lot of people talk about: the economic days and the fear of money, and I need to work in order to sustain survival skills and a place to live and all this. And so my question to the audience is, what do we do about that? What can we do to really wake people up to say, yes, we do need the money, but at the same time, we need to really focus in on finding that passion in whatever we do. And one thing I've come to the awareness of is to really shine a light on ourselves and go deep into ourselves to explore our emotional realm. And that really helped me to start seeing what feels good and what doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And that has been a great indicator for me to kind of balance the money and also the passion side, and show that when it feels good, anywhere we go can feel good. It's up to us to choose how we view that situation. Because I love one of my mentors is Abraham from Esther Hicks. Mm-hmm. And Abraham always says, go with go with the flow, go with what feels good, and really get into alignment with where you're at, because every situation is neutral, and it's about us to determine whether we want to make a positive or negative.
Right.
And if we come from a negative stance because of our inferior ego, we tend to put a negative slant on the situation. But if we can really come from a positive energy place, we can put a positive slant on the situation, because we're now tapping into that past situation that is similar, and saying that our past situation is positive, let's make this one positive. And if it's was negative, we'll say, okay, cancel. We're going to change that past, because that past is no longer there. We're going to put something new on the current situation and make it great.
Mm-hmm.
Find that one area that makes it great, and when you find that one area that makes it great, it spreads and really affects other situations.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm sorry, affects other situations.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about the ego, since that was a huge aspect of your book, and that's certainly the title of your book. But let's talk about, so there are, you know, you use Freud and Jung, and you use some of the newer New Age theories, and you use Nirvana principle. I mean, you've certainly touched on a lot of information to gather your unique interpretation of what you feel the ego is about. Just tell us what your interpretation is.
Well, my interpretation goes from an inferior ego. And what that means is that small voice inside us saying, we're not good enough, we're a victim, I don't deserve that, I can't do this, I'm afraid, to a superior ego, which is about confidence, power, I can do this, I'm great enough for this, I'm a master of my own destiny. And then to really tap into that by really going into the different levels that I use from Maslow, Abraham Maslow. And that is, okay, start with a positive energy, which is on the realm of physiological needs, and start to create more energy by eating the right foods or healthy foods, have a lot of water and other physical needs. Then that develops into the next level, or helps the next level, which is that safety needs. And a lot of times we get stuck there because we get into this fearful place and we're unable to develop the courage to get out of it. So because one thing about safety is that we need ways to feel protected enough to have that courage. And we fall short sometimes on that. So we stay in that fearful realm, thinking that we're not going to be safe if we venture forth. And how do we get out of that? And one key that I use, tell people and use to get out of that, is appreciate yourself. Because when you can start to appreciate yourself, you can start to move forward. And that appreciating yourself can start to say, okay, I don't need to judge anymore. Because when I judge myself, I judge others. So when it's like a gun, one finger pointing at someone, three fingers pointing back. So we can start to appreciate ourselves, letting go of that judgment. And even if we need even more, create a barrier, invisible barrier around us to start to say, okay, I'm in this bubble. Let's start appreciating ourselves. And then that will allow us to appreciate others. And why do we need to appreciate others? Well, because with what we want and what our ego's about is about desires. So when we want to go after desires, we can tap into how others have done it to help ourselves along the path. So when we could go in a mode of appreciating others, we can start to say, okay, they did it this way. Let's try it. Because I appreciate that about them. And then we could go to motivation, which is about motivating ourselves and getting support from others. And lastly, it's about having visions of what it looks like to be in the right place at the right time. And when we tap into those visions, the more and more we vision, the more and more the earth opens up for us to really bring us those synchronistic moments of being in the right place at the right time. And that's really what I like to use as kind of the one of the concepts in the ego, and then it goes into superego, which really now is about tapping into that past, like I said before, going into, okay, past situations, positive or negative. Positive situations will lead to more positive situations. Negative situations will lead to probably more negative situations, because we go into that Maslow hierarchy with the negative influence rather than the positive one. So that's where the superego comes in. And then the ego is great. That's the most magical place, because that really helps us to adapt. If we walk into a situation and everyone's talking English, but we talk Shakespearean, we're not probably going to fit in and adapt to the situation. And we may want to fit into the situation. There is good reasons to fit into the situation. A lot of people... And I've even come to a place sometimes where I've talked about fitting in. Oh, I don't want to do that. I want to be unique. And I've come to the awareness there's a time and place for everything. There's a time to be unique, and also there's a great time to fit in. Mm-hmm. And to really appreciate the times when to fit in or the times to be unique. And so let the ego do its job with how to fit in and adapt to the situation, to really make the best of the situation.
Right. And when you talk about that, I mean, you're talking about building rapport, I believe, with a person. And yes. I mean, that's what it seems like that I'm hearing. Okay.
Yeah. Or even taking into gravity. So if you're going to jump off a roof, your ego probably will tell you it's not such a good idea, because gravity probably will hit you hard. Mm-hmm. So it may not even be about rapport. It could be just other scenarios or time. Your ego's my version of the ego is about keeping management of time. So we can stay on appointments on time and let everything do what it needs to do with our, the help of our ego in all three modes or models.
Hmm. Well, it brings a whole different ball game if we start talking about time and people being late, and that could go into a whole different thing, because I think sometimes the ego's, but then, you know, is it the negative aspect of our ego that makes us always consistently late, or is it something that we're attracting because it's one of our issues? Or I mean, there's too much we could go into that. But
well, here's the thing too, that with time, when we tap into the great part of the ego, we're always synchronistic with time. Even when we think we're running late for whatever reason, the other people are running late too. It's always on time. Mm. But when we tap into the negative aspect, then we're not synchronistic. Then everything becomes dysfunctional, and that's where we get into trouble.
Mm. Now, you briefly sort of mentioned what the ego's job was. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So the ego's job basically is to give us that power and confidence, and so we can be more who we are. Because mm-hmm. for many years, I myself was afraid to be who I wanted to be, who I felt I was, to be authentic. Because when we were surrounded by others who... I've been surrounded by others who have been inauthentic, and I don't know, maybe some of your audience may feel the same way. Mm-hmm. And what happened to me was I conformed to that, to be inauthentic, thinking that...
That was how you fit in, which is probably why people get upset when they hear you saying, you know, to fit in.
Yes.
Because you're not talking about conforming.
No. At the same time, I am conformed to greatness. Not to fit inferiorness. So really, really find people, if you are going to conform, find people that can bring out your greatness and help conform to that. Mm-hmm. So it can, like anything else, it's a great tool and it can be used either way. Right. It's up to us whether we want to use it for greatness or not.
Right. In your book, you sort of talk about how, you know, the ego is to keep us grounded and focused on our environment and really about being safe. And that the positive aspect is about rewards and the negative is about punishment.
Yes.
And so we seem to be moving towards either one or the other. And that usually is about our safety. And that's really one of the gifts that the ego brings us, which is why you, I guess your example of, you know, do I want to jump off a roof? Your ego would have an issue with that because it's about safety. And, you know, I guess that's it, though. We're always looking towards, you know, what is going to give us reward and what is going to give us punishment.
Yes. And rewards can take on any shape and size. And it's up to the individual to see what the reward is. That my reward is different than someone else's reward, and my punishment is different than someone else's punishment. Mm-hmm. And yes, so the ego is really about desires, which is about rewards, or lack of, which is punishments. And to really find, again, that place that will show us if we were punished in a past situation to change that. Because that's where we fall short with this fear thing too. Mm-hmm. Fear is such a big mechanism people have to stop ourselves from doing something. And it's funny because some people even say, I want fear in my life mm-hmm. because that will push me forward. And all I think of is law of attraction. That the more fear we have, the more fear we will attract. Mm-hmm. So... okay, some people may enjoy that.
Yeah, just be careful what you ask for, sort of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I say confidence, not courage, because courage is overcoming fear, but really get to that place of confidence, of really saying, I am great the way I am. And no matter what anyone else says, I am the master of me. And I will take on what fits, and I will discard what doesn't.
And in a society such as ours, we have a lot of self-confidence issues and a lot of, I guess, fears around whether we are good enough. And certainly we have, you know, ample examples in our lives where we were put down as a child. You know, as soon as conditions were put on love, that was when we learned that, you know, that we had to do something or be something different to experience that love. And certainly that has sort of been what guided us in, I guess, the reward and the punishment theory, which is, you know, if you're to be loved, you know, you're to be the good girl and you're to, you know, sit pretty and, you know, be seen but not heard, and all of these things that you were told as a girl, and, you know, big boys don't cry, and all of the things you're told as boys, certainly impacts how we relate in the world and impacts our own confidence in our own abilities and who we are.
Yes. That's why I love tapping into relationships and really giving relationships for singles, because they can be at the forefront of really, I mean, anyone's at the forefront, but I chose singles because it's about relationships and getting into relationships and not about getting into conditional loving relationships, but really spreading that and expanding that to unconditional relationships, to say that, again, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. It only matters what I think. And what I want is an unconditional relationship. And what I want to teach others is to really strive for that same thing, to really change what was, because our path is about evolution. If we stay with what is and don't go for what can be, then we won't have evolution. Everything will be stale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's definitely an interesting time, and maybe, you know, so much talk about death of the ego and, you know, detaching yourself. I mean, I guess it would be very difficult to get to that place where you can embrace the ego, which is usually what I let people, you know, suggest to people. You know, learn to embrace it, learn to love it, learn to laugh with it when it, you know, triggers us in our, you know, more negative aspects. Learn to, you know, understand where each of us get triggered, and I guess where we focus on our punishments, where we focus on those aspects within ourselves that are the more negative. Like, look at all of those. And certainly in relationships, you learn and grow the most within yourself, as long as you are aware, and that becomes your focus to become a better person.
Yes, because if we don't, we die. Mm-hmm. It's, we may be walking around, but we're dead. Mm-hmm. We're dead inside. And I've met so many people along my path that has been dead inside, that it kind of makes me sad to know that there can be a greater way if we can just reach out and to, like you said, embrace your ego, than to just not and say it's, well, this way and not that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then we're not being authentic. We're detaching ourselves from a piece of our inner, like, of who we are.
Yes. Yeah. And when we detach ourselves, it's like cutting off our arm. Mm-hmm. That we're not fully functional. Mm-hmm. And there's no need to cut off our arm if it works well. Right. And we were just convinced to believe we had to cut off our arm, or in this case, put away our ego. Mm-hmm. And when we can really learn to use and embrace our ego to make it functional and make it more in harmony with who we are, then we can be that essence of greatness that mm-hmm. we strive for, or at least we think about of how it can be. I mean, for many years, I thought about what my greatness would be, and how does it look? How does it taste? How does it feel? And came to a place where I am happy with who I am, and my my greatness is now about really helping to wake people up to say they're amazing people, that they are perfect the way they are, mm-hmm. that the imperfection is actually perfect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so the only way that we can get into an alignment with our ego is to align it up with our soul.
Yes.
Let's talk about our soul.
Okay. Well, our soul is, I always consider it to be the essence of who we are, which is our connection, and it's our ease and comfort with ourselves, and it's also our purpose, that it helps to give us our purpose. It's comes from the afterworld, or however people would like to call the other dimension. And it has its own unique set of gifts and a purpose for when we come to this world, and when we bring our soul into this world, we can tap into that by through our sensitivity, mm-hmm. and start to wake ourselves up to bring ourselves more open to our soul, and really embrace that essence to start saying we're loving beings, and we're ready to create heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm. I have an interview on Thursday with Dr. Georgina Cannon, who wrote a book called Interlife, and that's what she's calling that time in between where our soul comes and makes our plan and connects in, and it's very interesting, but it kind of falls in with what you're talking about. Certainly there are, you know, different religions. You sort of say that the body, obviously, it houses the soul. But you seem to think that there's a connection with the body and the soul. Talk about that.
I always considered the body to be like a car, that we have the brain, which is the engine of the car, mm-hmm. and the rest of the body, which is the body of the car. And we house the soul in this car, and then we have the ego in this car. And it's about driving our body now, really making our body great, like a car. Like if something's wrong, you take it into the mechanic, or in this case, some kind of health practitioner, and create the best body we can to really have our soul in the driver's seat and our ego in the passenger seat, so the soul can be a driver, essence being B, and the ego is the doer, which is about reading the maps, getting us to our destination. Mm-hmm. So our body is really that mechanism to get us to where we want to go. Because in this world, we need some kind of mechanism. Otherwise, we'll be all floating around and maybe going through each other. Mm-hmm. And I do talk about sex in my book, but here... So the body is the car.
Right. And you say that the soul is where our passions are. Like, that's where... That's that essence of us that drives us towards, really it's our path, but it's the things that really drive us towards what we are wanting.
Mm.
And it certainly seems to indicate through our emotions, or, you know, it's, you know, a joy or something you don't want. And it becomes, you can typically, you know, get a good understanding of who you are by looking at your likes and dislikes.
Yes.
Or your wants and unwants.
Yes. Well, the soul is about the journey. I have a saying, which is, remember your greatness, experience your greatness, and project your greatness, and you have it made. So the ego is about the past and the future, and the soul is about the presence, and it's the now, and it's the journey, and it's the place in us that connects with our God, with the God source, to bring in that information so we can know where our desires are waiting, you know, on what stage. Because this world's a big place, and we need some kind of mechanism to say, okay, I got to go left rather than right. And I love it now because when I'm in a parking lot, I get the best spots because I'm able to tap into that from using my soul to tap into that God source to say, okay, the best spot is going to be make a left, turn right, go down three spots, and someone is going to pull out or there's going to be an open spot. And most of the time it works, especially when I have that confidence to say, I'm open to that. And I'm not going to judge that. And I'm going to see what happens.
Cool. And I guess you said, you know, is are the communication between the God source?
Yes. It goes, in my interpretation, it goes from the God source through the higher self to our soul. Then that soul goes to our ego. That ego desire goes into a prayer, which is an intention, an invisible intention, which hits our God, back up to the God source. And there's a whole circuit that is created by the soul, ego, and God source. And that if one is cut off, then the other ones become dysfunctional.
Right.
And it doesn't work. It's like a operating system that runs short all the time rather than expansive all the time.
Okay, let's spend some time because I think this was a really interesting aspect of your book, but you talk about the dysfunctional relationships with the ego, and it really ties in well with this because you're talking about, you know, the driver and the car, and that's really what the analogy that you put into all of this. So let's talk about stage one, because I think there are a lot of people that are depressed. And I think depression is probably, you know, a number one problem that seems to be occurring, especially around this time. So let's talk about what depression is as you see it.
So in my interpretation of depression, it's about the soul being locked up, which creates apathy. When the soul is open, it's empathy for others. But when it's really we lock our souls, which I've described earlier, it creates apathy. And then what happens is our ego, it's really about inferior desires, saying that we're not good enough, we're a victim, we're not worthy. But most of all, what really happens in depression is, if you can picture a car again, the soul and the ego, you might say, are in the back seat. No one is driving the car, and the ego is not doing what it's meant to do. And it's like almost as if no one is in the car at all, but I'm going to put the soul and the ego in the back seat and say, okay, it's about apathy of the soul and boredom of the ego really come together to create depression.
And so what would someone do if they're in this place of depression, apathy, and...
That's a great question. Come see me. really, what they can do is to start using your ego and start to create, get on that path of going after your desires. So it may not be who you are yet, the desires, because you're starting again to rev up the engine. And so it's starting to have those desires and go after those desires. And then after a while, and you're on the path again of creating desires, now start to adjust yourself to have a look at who you are. Because after going after desires for a certain time, it starts to wake us up. It starts to motivate us again.
So you're saying to put the ego in the driver's seat for just a little while and start doing some things?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And once that's done, again, don't get caught. Don't use it as a crutch later on. But start to then shift positions from the ego in the driver's seat and start putting it in the passenger seat where the soul...
Before we go there, though, let's talk about stage two, because that's talking about the ego in the driver's seat and the soul in the back seat. So let's talk about that, because that's about the ego being inferior, having an inferior complex.
Yes.
Or a superior complex, I would suggest, possibly.
I know. No, inferior.
Okay.
Yes, because now the ego is in the driver's seat, and it's starting to do things, but right. there's a lot of fear there.
Okay.
So we're able to go, let's say, to those places, but when we get to those places, we have a lot of fear, and we may not be able to go after what we really want in those places. For instance, take the dating world and take a bar scene. So I may go to the bar, but when I see that woman, that pretty woman, up against the bar or something, I may have the fear still that won't let me go into that situation to start talking to the woman. So we still are able to go after our desires, but our fear kicks in at a certain point and starts to back us up, saying, can't do this just yet. I'm at the verge, but I can't do this just yet. So that's about the inferior ego saying, I can't do this, I can't do that. So the ego is in the driver's seat, but it's...
Okay, so I guess when I was saying a superior ego, sometimes there are a lot of people that it's sort of... Or is that... Oh, that's stage three.
That's stage three, yes.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. So it is about fear.
Yeah.
So, okay, so first... So first we've got somebody who has both the ego and the soul in the backseat.
Yes.
Then they have to move to bringing the ego into the driver's seat.
Yes.
But then they have to face their
fears. Yes.
And then we move to stage three, which is the egomaniac.
Yes.
Okay.
And the egomaniac is about stepping on others to get ahead. It's about cutting off people on the road to get to the destination the fastest, and which really is about power and confidence, whatever you do. But this, again, still the soul is really non-existent.
Okay.
And the soul is in the passenger seat trying to get to the driver's seat, but because of that power and confidence, and the soul is about patience, it's not able to do that. So the egomaniac is in the driver's seat, taking control, saying, hey, I want to get somewhere and I'm going to do it. Hey, I'm at a bar, I'm going to talk to the woman. So the egomaniac will talk to the woman. And it doesn't matter what he says, and that's where the player comes in.
Okay. So the player, the one who says everything you want to hear, but...
Yes, has no soul.
Right.
Yeah.
Has no soul. So the focus with the egomaniac is doing and getting.
Yes, yes.
And the focus of the ego inferior in stage two is about protection and survival.
Yes.
And number one, it's just about apathy and boredom. They're just not anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. So you have to start doing something.
Yes.
To get yourself out of the first stage.
Yes.
And then you have to start believing in yourself.
Yes.
Ideally, if you could bring the ego into the driver's seat for a little while and then allow the soul to come in, that would be how it would all align up properly.
Yes.
So let's talk about now we're going to be at stage four, which is the soul now takes over. Starts to get into the driver's seat. And this is where you were talking about how, or maybe even some of the new age theories out there where, you know, we cut off the ego.
Yes. That I've been to a lot of groups that it's all about creating the spiritual essence and really being loving and very, very affectionate with each other and connecting with each other. However, these people are also very flighty and they're not grounded.
Mm-hmm.
They're not connected to the physical. They're really connected to the astral planes.
The etheric, yeah.
No, yes.
That's what I noticed in the beginning of my search too, is that most of the people on the in quote spiritual journey tend to, you know, move from the heart up, and they don't ground themselves in their body. They're not, you know, in the solar plexus or the sacral or the root chakra. They're just floating up above themselves. And, you know, sometimes they're not even in their body and they're saying they have these, you know, nirvana experiences, but they're really not allowing that true aspect of who we are to come into their body. So they're not really enjoying the immense array of emotion and the, you know, the juiciness that this life can offer. They're totally above.
Yes. Yeah. And they also still have those voices saying, I'm not good enough. I'm a victim. I don't deserve this. And that small talk going on. Mm-hmm. And
well, it's hard to manifest if you're not in your body.
Yes.
Because you're not really aware of the other aspects that are going on.
Yes. Yeah. Because that ego part has been cut off. Mm-hmm. And but it doesn't get cut off. What you resist persists.
Mm, of course.
So when they resist the ego, it turns dysfunctional and it kicks back. It's like a dysfunctional child. When someone abuses a child, no matter how loving that child will be, that child will turn into something that will fight back, that mm-hmm. will become maybe destructive on this planet. And our egos are the same way, that if we abuse it and we start doing things to it that is horrible, it's going to turn destructive and it's going to fight back. And it's going to fight back with a vengeance to say that it doesn't like it.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got soul driving, ego be in the back seat or cut off completely.
Or I'd say in the passenger seat. Let's start okay. moving the soul up too.
Okay. So, and I also saw that is the martyr. You know, there's a lot of people that kind of martyr themselves, and I yes. see that often that's the feeling I get when I, you know, connect with a martyr, is that they're totally in their soul but they're have no ego.
Yes they cut themselves completely off from any desire, any and therefore they don't have much power per se. They are more in the zone of being the martyr, saying, or maybe I'll ask you this. What's your definition of martyr?
Well, it seems to me that it's somebody who's always just doing for somebody else. Like they're never really, you know, they're seemingly completely doing things for everybody else and a martyr doesn't receive. A martyr is always just doing for others. It's not about receiving any of the connection back. It's just, you know, taking their whole life and is always projected outwards.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that definitely would be a martyr then. The soul, they have great soul. They a lot of affection, a lot of absolutely. Giving. And but do they really get satisfied? Mm-hmm. And they believe they're satisfied, but they don't get anything back until they actually do have a little essence of the ego. Because sometimes what happens is the martyr actually, when they give, they get maybe not something physical, but something invisible, which is that love back. Mm-hmm. And when they feel it, that's their reward. So sometimes the martyr doesn't get anything back. And yes, that will be dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. But sometimes the martyr does. And when they do, then it becomes functional.
More healthy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we're going into stage 5, which is the empowered relationship with ego and soul.
My favorite one. And what that is really the soul is loving, and it has a lot of empathy and connection and ease and flow, and taps into the God source and really starts to wake into who we are. And the ego is in the passenger seat and reading the maps and is in that place of confidence and power and saying, we can do it. We can get there. And really being motivated and looking for what it needs to look for to help get us to the destination. And when we're at the destination, we easily go into that situation with great ease and flow and are able to really create that rapport and create that beautiful essence of greatness and that others can feel. And when you walk into the presence of greatness, you can feel that. It's such an amazing thing around the individual who does that, and they can get whatever they want. And it's not then about whatever you want anymore, per se. It's about what you authentically want. So that sometimes those diamonds turns into earth gems, and sometimes the gold turns into something different, because it's no longer. Sometimes we think diamonds or gold are great because our egos are saying it's great, but sometimes we realize that when we have our soul and ego working together, we actually want something else. We actually want something more connecting with the earth, per se. Like diamonds and gold, sure, they can be a connection to the earth, but for the most part, sometimes the people I've spoke with, it's more about possession. It's more about ownership and control of this substance rather than to really appreciate what is. Mm-hmm. And to really go in with such liveliness that everything transcends. Mm-hmm. And it's possible that people said, What I'm talking about, sometimes people have said only the enlightened gurus can achieve. But I believe we can all achieve that. Mm-hmm. I believe when we have soul and ego in the right spots in the car, that everyone becomes a master and everyone becomes an enlightened being. And everyone really has their own destiny that they're creating.
Right. Which would go against a lot of gurus, but yes. I think certainly for this realm and this dimension that's probably a place that we could go that would make us feel like we're in this world.
Mm.
Not necessarily of it, but certainly in it. And I think, you know, there's a lot of joy and beauty that can be experienced if we really live in the world.
Yes. Look how many great restaurants there are.
So we're getting close to the end, but you know, a lot of your story had to do with relationships and how you weren't able to have the confidence to connect with women, and you seem to have overcome that. And now you are, you know, wanting to assist people to get to that same place. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Okay. Yes. When I was growing up, I was so afraid. I thought women hated me. I thought I was a monster. I was locked up. I felt like I was locked up because I was ill all the time, and I was ill more than I was well. So my mother kept me inside because if I went out, I'd get worse. So I stayed inside and I started to feel like I was locked up. And all these negative situations happened where, like I said, I felt like women, girls at that time, hated me. And I never knew why. But I kept on pursuing. I wanted to be popular with girls. I had a girlfriend when I was very young and loved it. And later on, I saw her again and she could not remember me. Mm. I was devastated.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept on saying that I want to fit in with girls. I enjoy their company. Sometimes I even felt more connected with girls than I did with guys. Mm-hmm. I was never that good at sports. But and boys that I grew up with love sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sensitive. So I felt like I would connect more with girls than with guys. But because of that insecurity, it was like there was no place where I could go to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
That the boys were one way, the girls were another way. And then there was me who was trying to reach for a place to find love. and to find people that I could enjoy their company with. Mm-hmm. So I grew up not really having anything serious till my late 20s, when I started to say, okay, I need help. And then I saw this life coach, and she helped to show me that I mattered, and helped to also show me that I had a book that was waiting to come out. And I started to explore that. And I then wrote chapter one, which was all about me. And I knew that I had to write my story because I wanted to show people that I was there. I came from a dysfunctional place, and I gained a lot more confidence, and to show people too that they can do it too, and that they mattered. And then I wrote the rest of the book. And then after that, a woman came to me who loved my book and said she wanted to publish it. And I was thinking, wow, I'm now starting to be recognized by women for things that I have that about me. And I started to see that more women started to really show up to say, wow, I mattered. And now I'm in a loving relationship that we're going to be moving in together. And it's such an amazing experience to now start to see I mattered with women, and that I have a gift that I could show others that they matter too, and they matter to each other. That it's just, all it is, it's a belief blunder, a simple mistake that one time we took on and kept on living over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that's my passion, is to really help those to let that go and to start taking on a new belief that they do matter. Mm-hmm. And they are great, essence of greatness, just waiting to blossom.
Hmm. Well, it has been a pleasure, Neil. Why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you?
Well, you can actually come out to one of my groups, which is my meetup.com groups called Consciously Dating. And I have a group, actually an event coming up next Wednesday night, as well as they can go to bepositive.biz and send me an email at info@bepositive.biz. Oh, so one of those two ways. And I really look forward to connecting with people who want to open themselves up for more.
Cool. All right. Well, again, it's been a pleasure, and hope to see you back.
It was great, Lori. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So we will be back on Thursday.